This program is brought to you by Resonance 104.4 FM. If you like what you hear and want to support our work, please make a donation at fundraiser.resonance.fm.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM and www.resonancefm.com on the net. And today's guests are Jeremy Reed and Jerry McNee, co-members of the Ginger Light. Welcome to you. Thank you very much both for coming in.
Good afternoon.
And the Ginger Light is a performance, I mean, poetry, performance, music act. Can you expand on what you do?
Well, we're a kind of unique duo, a genre that combines dramatically, projectively performed poetry with soundscapes, beats, in a very modern way.
Right. And you are a prolifically published author, Jeremy. I've written
Yes.
many, many books. In fact, you've got so many. I've got a whole list here, which I printed out. Many, many books of poetry, starting with By the Fisheries in 1984, non-fiction and biography, Madness, The Price of Poetry, Delirium, Lipstick, Sex and Poetry, Bitter Blue, Waiting for the Man, Angels, Scott Walker, Another Tear Falls, and novels, The Lipstick Boys, Blue Rock, Red Eclipse, Chasing Black Rainbows. It all sounds very dramatic.
Well, yes, most of my work is quite unusually angled, but yeah, I tend to work always within the same imaginative radius, but poetry, fiction and non-fiction to me are all one coherent whole written out of the same impetus, so that my novels are very poetic and so are my biographies.
Right. Yeah, okay. I should just say that we're in the studio and my guests have chosen to have the window open. So we might hear the occasional cry from children in a distant playground.
We like that.
So, and there is a third member of Ginger Light or not?
Yes.
Or is it, you call yourself a duo, but I suspect that there is one person missing from the trio.
Well, we have a harpist, Maria Cristina.
Right.
And she joins us. She's She travels a lot. She works with a lot of other people. So when she can, she'll come and join us.
Okay. Okay. But is she a member? Is she part of Ginger Light? She's just sort of like a backup, sort of like a sessions musician?
No, she can't. She's a member.
She's a member and a very beautiful colorist who adds layers to our particular sound and performance.
Right. And she plays the harp.
She plays the harp.
Unusually.
In a totally magical way.
Yeah, which must be quite difficult to transport, I imagine.
Is
it a big harp?
It's very big, but she manages very well to get about it.
Okay. All right.
She's used to it.
So, Jerry McNee. Yeah. Are you Itchy Ear?
Yeah.
Is that what you were called before, or you still are called Itchy Ear?
They run concurrently.
Do they? Okay. Yeah. Okay. And what is your role in the?
Mostly act? Soundscapes.
Right.
Beats.
Yeah.
I mean, I tend to work around the poem. I'll build around it.
Okay. And you do. I did look at some clips where you were at the ICA, where there were sort of visuals. There's a strong visual aspect.
Yeah, we have
aspect.
A lot of projections behind us.
Is that you too, or do you get some?
Yeah, I edit the films okay. that we can project behind us. Yeah.
Oh, right. So you're a sort of audio-visual person.
Yeah, multimedia.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So how did you meet you two? How long have you been the Ginger Light?
Well,
if you
we've
were
been the Ginger Light now for about 10 years.
Oh,
I
right.
I think. We met when I was working at a counterculture bookshop, Red Snapper, and
yes.
Jerry would come in to browse, and then we discovered uh-huh. we had mutual interests, and he knew about my solo performances, and we decided that we would, you know, atmospherically combine and mix moods and yeah. sounds, and so we started out
right,
in okay. Jerry's own little home studio. We yeah. started recording there, and then eventually, about 6 months later, we went out live.
Right. Because our connection, Jeremy, I mean, we know each other through books, really, originally,
yes,
don't we?
Very much so.
Because I know you from various bookshops.
That's right.
I think we covered this when you came in the last time, but there was Peter Jolliffe in Ulysses who used to always talk very favourably about you.
Hmm.
Ulysses being the sort of modern first editions dealer.
That's right.
And then you were in Cecil Court. Red Snapper was originally James...
Allen.
James Allen, who's now where, in Belgium or something?
I think so, yeah. I helped Aaron Budnick when he ran
right.
Red Snapper for
right.
4 years. And, of course, I wrote there. That was part of the agreement that I would write at the desk and
yes.
serve interesting customers who came mm. in.
Right, because in my sort of subsidiary role as book dealer and book collector, I would occasionally come into your shop sort of looking at the fairly pricey items, it has to be said. I think Aaron... knows how to price a book, doesn't
yes.
he?
Oh, yes. Our prices were not really extravagant because,
no.
you know, the items are limited and rare.
Yes.
And the two of us got on fabulously because we were both bibliomaniacs, so books were our speciality.
Exactly. How is Aaron?
I haven't seen Aaron for several months, but I hope he's very well and listening to this.
Okay. Would he listen? Is he likely to listen?
Well, it's quite possible.
He runs books to Paris, I think.
Yes, he does.
Is that fair to say? He's a kind of...
Yes, he runs books to Shakespeare Bookshop in Paris. But, of course, the two of us being very long-term friends and book enthusiasts, of course, we meet independently
yep.
now of Red Snapper and talk books.
Right.
Which, of course, is a great love of that we share.
Yeah. And Jerry, what was your interest in books? How did you come to be... What were you looking for when you entered the shop, as it were?
Most things, most sort of pop culture things.
Right,
and
okay.
It was an ideal place to...
Yeah. Are you a collector or dealer?
I'm not a collector, more of a browser at those prices.
Yeah. I work in a bookshop at the moment, so there's quite a lot of browsing,
yeah.
isn't there? It's a sort
yeah.
of...
Yes.
Would you say that it's a fairly male activity, browsing?
No, I wouldn't. I see a lot of girls browsing.
Do you?
Mm.
I think it's a fabulous place to meet obsessives, eccentrics, people at an angle to life, or the nice and right people.
Right, okay.
I met fabulous people at Red Snapper.
Yeah.
Made many friends. We
yep.
had Pete Doherty come into the shop very, very often.
Oh, really?
To whom I would introduce books by Burroughs and Ballard, etc.
Uh-huh.
We had a lot of wonderful people come to Red Snapper.
I think Pete Doherty had a connection with Jake Field, didn't he?
That's right, who now is in Cecil Court with a children's book shop.
Specialises in Alice in Wonderland.
That's right, specialises in Alice in Wonderland, which is marvellous.
Yeah, and what was his link with Pete Doherty? Was he sort of some sort of... He's not exactly a manager, but a kind of...
Probably some associate of some sort, yes.
Right. Hmm. OK. So that... OK, so the two of you... You were the Itchy Ear on your own, a solo performer,
yeah.
Jerry. And Jeremy Reed was the poet. And I should say, whenever I went into Red Snapper, or in fact, whenever I see you, you're writing a poem.
Mm.
Or writing something. If I see you in the Patisserie Valerie,
yes.
You're constantly writing.
Yes.
You must be one of the most, what's the word for somebody that just, a prolific sort of a writing machine almost.
Well, some people just have that gift whereby, you know, if you're so immersed in it, it's always within you, so you don't have to search for it, so that, you know, if I'm writing a book at home in the morning, I can continue writing it on a bus, I can continue writing it in Leicester Square, right. In a cafe, yeah. Anywhere.
It's but the opposite of writer's block, in a way.
Yeah, the complete opposite. You know, I've never liked that sort of academic type who have to write at a desk. It's
no.
Utterly pointless. You need to take your work out into a more dynamic atmosphere.
Yeah.
Which is what I constantly do.
Sure.
Which is why I brought along a poem to read you called Writing Outside, which is what I do all the time.
Shall we hear Writing Outside?
Hmm.
Please.
Writing Outside. I meet them all, anomalous strangers, aberrant, inquisitive, abnormal. Drawn to me like it's Chinese characters, I manipulate with ink into Zen as word partners, word partners. You've got one up on me for riding on the streets, self-exposure, self-exposure. A species of indulgent criminality like keyless theft. And what I lift from you is aspects of your personality. The jewel-like strands, the dirty stuff that's sweet, I do it in your face. Clouds stacking up like a sugar skull over Leicester Square, moribund, cirrostratus, humped purple. I get my friends like that. Exchange numbers. The accidental synchronicity works to advantage. The way time slows down in public and seems to create delay, like thinking backwards. Sex comes into it. You don't know what's my preference. Only I represent what you suppressed as arguable potential poetry. We all imagine as romantic quest. And I'm the strange attractor doing it for you with attitude you won't forget.
Is that a recent poem?
That's a recent poem I wrote maybe 3 weeks ago.
Right.
I like writing, you know, in people's faces because you're stealing the colour of their eyes, their personality. Yeah. It's like verbal kleptomania.
Right. That's a good way of putting it. Mm. So, Gerald, what's your background? How did you come to be in Gingerlight? Where did you kind of emerge from?
Well, I've always worked in music, collaborating with other people mostly.
Right.
And as a job, graphic design.
Right.
So, that's pretty much it. Yeah.
Okay.
And we found an immediate synchronicity in that Jerry so sensitively and brilliantly responds to the mood of the poem, the colour of the poem, and so...
I was going to say, do you plot it beforehand, your performances, or do you kind of improvise as it's being, you know, as it's being done?
Well, normally what happens, the process is Jeremy will record the poem, and then I kind of build around it.
Right.
I just colour it depending on the poem.
What was the first track we played?
That was Nifty Jim.
Nifty Jim, yes.
Nifty Jim. And is that from you? Are you thinking, is that from a recent CD?
That was from the album released through Cherry Red. When was that? A few years back?
Yes, a few years back. Big City Dilemma.
Right. Yeah. So that was your first CD then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And perhaps we should quickly get in this. You're playing somewhere soon? The Horse Hospital?
We're playing in Horse Hospital next Thursday, 28th.
28th, yes.
Okay. So what's that event? What's going on?
It's a commemorative show for two poets who are dead in recent years, Lee Harwood, close friend of mine, and Tom Raworth. Also performing that evening is Ian Sinclair and Chris McCabe.
Okay.
And the Gettles. What's the Gettles name? There's another performer.
Is there? Yes, so there's four performers.
Four performers. Ian Sinclair, what's he doing? Is it a reading?
He'll be reading. Okay. And we'll be performing a particular set that we've chosen for the occasion.
Right, okay. Do you know Ian Sinclair well?
Yes. He published a book of mine when he was at HarperCollins called Redhead Android. I've always admired Ian immensely, and we've performed on quite a few occasions together.
Great. Okay, so that's Horse Hospital, the 28th.
28th.
Okay.
From 7:30.
Right.
Thursday.
Next Thursday.
Yeah.
How much does it cost to get in? Do we know?
£5. £3 concession.
All right. So that's the Ginger Light, Ian Sinclair. Who else?
Chris McCabe.
And MacGyver, is it?
Is it? Yes, I'm
another uncertain. Someone we haven't met before.
Right. Okie doke.
Female performer.
All right. And you, it looks like, I'm just reading through some notes here. In your decade of existence, you have performed at most major venues in London, as well as recently headlining the Zurich Literary Festival at Cabaret Voltaire. Mm. That's quite an impressive CV.
Yes, well, we are brilliant. Or rather, we're unique. There is nobody out there that does what we do. You know, there's a lot of poetry slams, attempts at rap, but it doesn't come from the same sort of nucleus as how we very carefully prepare our work and carefully prepare our shows.
Right, right.
There's a lot of technique, both in my writing and, of course, in Jerry's music.
Yeah, yeah.
So when we perform live, we prepare a set that seems apposite to the particular venue and occasion at which we're performing.
Right. Who would you say, is there anyone particular influenced you, Jeremy, in your poetry? Where do you come from in you know, what's your sort of background, as it were?
Well, I've always just done my own thing. I've always found most poetry readings extremely boring, in the sense that the poet spends more time introducing the poem than reading it. So, you know, you get a 5, 6, 7 minute introduction to a poem that lasts 2 minutes. Yeah. And really, it becomes extremely tiresome.
Yes.
Because most poets are unable to project. What the Ginger Light do, we actually, well, we perform. We perform poetry.
Right.
And Jerry's music allows me to do that to the degree that I wish.
Yeah, yeah. There was an interview with you. Is it Glass? Is it a magazine called Glass? You don't know?
No idea.
You have Glass,
no
memory of
it. Glass magazine.
So long ago, perhaps.
Yeah.
But in that, they asked you which countercultural heroes from present day would you write about? And you mention Mick Taylor of the Rolling Stones, from 1969 to 1974. Mm-hmm. And who else? And then, I thought this was a nice quote. In terms of poetry, all those guys like Alan Hollinghurst, they're trash to me. They're not even writers. They're just people who manipulate the system. He's Edwardian. It's so politically correct and mainstream. I don't want to single him out as a bad writer. having done so.
No, I don't.
But that sort of ordinary writing doesn't interest me. I'd much rather have somebody who actually lives it, not somebody who's wealthy and sits down at a desk for an hour a week. There are much more interesting people that create out of a corner. Is that fair enough?
Yeah, I suppose writers who are careerists don't interest me, because they are a counter-argument to those who do it for just creativity.
Right. Yes.
That's why I don't sit at a desk.
But you do sit at the Patisserie Valerie. That is your desk.
Well,
you are drawn towards Soho, aren't you?
Oh, very much so, of course. Yeah. To write sometimes indoors, sometimes outdoors, yes, because Soho still has a hub of energy which, yes, speaks to me.
Although you do write critically about Soho as well, as though it has sort of lost some of its soul, I suppose. It's not quite what it was, is it?
Well, I suppose every generation has its own Soho, doesn't it?
Yes.
I suppose in terms of Soho, I've tried to rehabilitate, as I do in my biographies, figures that have gone into neglect, like I did a biography of John Stephen, who created Carnaby Street. And my biographies usually aim to excavate neglected geniuses who've gone off radar.
Right, okay. Does that include, I mean, Lee Harwood and Tom Raworth are pretty well known, weren't they, in their own way?
That's counterculture poets, yes, or subculture poets, but never assimilated into the mainstream in any way.
No?
No.
Okay, okay. And you had some connection with J.G. Ballard, I think.
Yes, very close connection to Ballard, yes. We mutually admired each other's writing to an inordinate degree.
Right. And so there's some story involving Heathrow Airport, is that true? You and Ballard, or...?
Well, I think what I admired about Jim was that, you know, he broke with the concerns of the English novel, predominantly with social realism. He broke that away and stuck it out as a, you know, tourist from the future. And that's what I always liked about Ballard. And he gave me a very neural language, which I employ in poetry, and quite a scientific language. Often, he used to always say to me, literary language is dead, neural is the future. And reading his books to me was...
What do you mean by neural? What does that mean?
A language that, you know, I guess pioneers and explores inner space.
Okay.
Ballard always said objects travelling into space had no context, that, you know, you were an astronaut of inner space.
Right.
That's how he really changed the English novel. And for me, I started reading him almost when I was at school, and his work influenced me in a huge way and continues to do so.
Okay.
I see Ballard as a genius.
Right. Great. All right. Shall we play something from... What are we going to play off the laptop here? What is this track?
Something
called Dope, I think.
Dope.
Dope is a cover of a poem by John Wieners.
John, okay. So this is your own... This is the two of you? This is
Yes.
Yeah. Jeremy reading one of his poems.
Okay. All right, let's play this and just take it from there.
No longer. Youth has returned to me after two sniffs of heroin. The lift, as Charles would call it, have a whiff on me. They said the old song went in California. As we crossed the Golden Gate with Joanne and Nem, Annie Hatch, etc., our faces show the strain at 30. We'll never see again why heroin redeems us. But I don't advise it to the young or for anyone but me. My eyes are blue, are yours too, are yours too. The rain falls, but not on me. My skin gets a new lift, I don't need no food. How long will this go on? Only till tomorrow, when I will collapse in a heap on the bed of the world. Oh destiny, spare me. Gold, blue, jewels of the day, opalescent rubies off the moon, amethyst to the sun, white marbles at noon. The rain falls out to our ankles, grey tourmaline, topaz from Mexico, brought back as booty, a golf ball to adorn your little finger. Can you lift your hand now to fuck the sun? Fuck the sun. That's enough. I gotta lie down with memories as my only pillows, and raindrops the only thing that's happening. I wonder what the scene's like in New York, baby. I bet it's swinging. in the noonday sun. In the noonday sun. I bet it's swinging in the noonday sun.
Well, that track is called Dope, and is that I have to retrospectively apologise for any offence yes. caused by any word that may have slipped out during that reading. I didn't notice it, but
we forgot it.
My attention.
Yeah,
was
we forgot it.
I warned you beforehand.
It's in the John Wiener's poem.
Ah, okay. It just, you forgot. Yeah. We all forgot. Okay.
Yeah, when you're covering somebody else, you tend to forget those sort of little slips.
Yes, all right. Well, let's hope it slips through. Otherwise, someone's involved in hours of bureaucratic... okay, so tell me about this track. What's John Wiener's?
John Wiener's.
Yeah.
Very underground American poet who died about 10 years ago. Uh-huh. Big influence on me. We did... two or three of John Wiener's tracks. We perform them live sometimes.
Right.
We like to do, you know, in the way that singers do covers, we like sometimes to do other people's work which we admire.
Yeah.
Which is also all part of our own performance.
You knew Wiener's?
No, I didn't. Ah, no, okay. Unfortunately not. I don't think he ever came to this country.
I was going to say, I wondered if you'd ever been to America or...
No, he lived in California, but most of his life in Boston, so our paths didn't cross.
Okay, right. All right, so you're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM with Jeremy Reed and Jerry McNee, co-members of the Ginger Light, who are appearing at the Horse Hospital on the 28th with Ian Sinclair and others. So, here's the bit about J.G. Ballard. He was attracted to Heathrow Airport, where he went every afternoon for tea, watching arrivals and sitting in those lounges. That's where he got his big fire up. That's interesting. So he'd go to Heathrow Airport to be inspired and sit and watch the planes or something.
Yes.
It's an interesting location for writing, isn't it? I can sort of imagine that.
You know, that's all part of the integrals of Ballard's writing.
Yeah. And he said, now my favourite writer is William Gibson. Is that you or he?
Yes, I'm a huge William Gibson admirer.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And, all right, you've written about various rock musicians. You say you'd like to do a biography of Mick Taylor, but you have done... what was Here Comes the Nice? What was that?
That was a novel.
Ah.
That was a novel. Okay. A time travel novel which had... John Stephen and various other fixtures like that in it.
Okay. So you have an interest in that sort of mod era of London.
Yeah, very much. But I always stick it in the present. Whenever I write about the past, I stick it in the present and therefore rework the timeline through time slips so that it's always now in the present.
Yeah.
So if I was writing a novel about Christopher Marlowe, which I did, The Grid, I put him now in the 21st century and looking backwards to... the interaction of past and present.
Right.
That's how I always work.
Okay.
Because I can't bear historic novels, so I always...
Did you ever encounter Derek Jarman?
Yes. Here? Yes, quite
any,
often.
Any kind of sort of overlap of interest there at all? Or?
Well, Derek was fabulous. I mean, the total commitment to creativity, the wonderful speaking voice, the great knowledge of literature.
Yeah.
And like me, you know, just did it without money or pretension or... just did what he did.
Right.
Fabulous.
Was you mentioning Christopher Marlowe and so on.
Yes.
There's lots of those sort of references. His films sort
Absolutely.
Of do that thing, don't they, of mixing up history
Very
with
much
the present.
So. Yeah, which is what
with
I
the present
like
day.
To do. And in a way, that's what we do with music as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what are the other rock musicians you've written about, or who are they?
Well, I've written about my favourite all-time singer, Mark Almond.
Right. Okay.
I've written about Scott Walker. And I've written two biographies of Lou Reed. The last one came out about 3 years ago.
Right.
Called Waiting for the Man.
Okay. So you have a strong interest in rock music? Or
huge
pop
interest, yes, in pop and rock, yes.
Right.
Whereas Jerry is much more multicultured in music than me.
Yeah. There was a sort of phase a few years ago where the people started to say poetry is the new rock and roll or something. Did you get caught up in that at all? Was that all? You did it just pass you by, or you don't care?
I think you just passed me by because I doubt it could ever actually be that.
Right. Okay.
It never was. What?
It never was.
No, it never happened.
No.
It was a myth.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Kate Tempest. That sort of any interest in Kate Tempest and that sort of.
I don't know Kate Tempest's work on enough level to be able to comment. Jerry may be able to, I don't know.
Not really, no. It strikes me more as closer to rap than poetry.
Right, okay. All right, I won't go into that argument. Well, speaking of Mark Almond, does this have some relevance to Mark Almond?
Well, Mark's last album called Shadows and Reflection, the title track was a cover of The Action. So it might be nice to hear a track.
Shall we play that? So this is an old single from The Action, a 1960s mod group, I think it's fair to say, with whom you have a particular connection. You knew the singer or
No, I didn't know the singer, but you had going back to books, Martin Stone, who was a close friend of mine and probably the greatest bibliophile of his generation, had played with The Action. That's how I knew of their work.
Right.
And Martin would tell me a lot about the vocalist Reg King.
Uh-huh. So Martin Stone was the guitarist for a while.
For a while with The Action. Action, yes.
So there are two connections then. We have that connection, and then also this is a version. Mark Almond covered this track?
Not this particular track, no. He covered Shadows and Reflections. We're going to play a track which Jerry likes, this is a cover of it which he may well not like.
Oh, all right. Well, before I dig too much of a hole for myself, we'll try and just play this. This is The Action then, and this track is called. This is a cover of a Tamla Motown track called I'll Keep Holding. On Holding On. Okay.
Come on, girl. Watching. Come on, girl. All right, leave. Come on, girl.
So that was The Action, I'll Keep on Holding On, Tamla Motown cover. So we had the links there. Martin Stone, who played with The Action, and Mark Almond, who covered The Action.
Correct, yes.
Good. Okay, got that a bit right anyway.
I don't know how Jerry felt about that version.
How did Jerry feel about
that? That was fine.
Why did you think he might not like it?
Probably for the production. Jerry is so very, very aware and sensitive of production that I
production
thought...
Production sounded fine.
Okay, good. All right, all right. So we can move on from that
for
safely.
It's all right.
So you were supposed to mention a book at some point there. We have to backpedal slightly, so you can mention this book. What's the book?
Well, we recorded a number of poems for a book called... China Red Smoke, which are poems about the novelist Anna Kavan, who died in 1968, whose novel Ice has just been published by Penguin Classics. Anna was a heroin addict, a very special writer, and very much admired by J.G. Ballard, who regarded her as one of the great 20th century novelists.
Okay.
I wrote a biography of Anna Kavan called A Stranger on Earth. And out of that interest, and for a book that will come out called China Red Smoke with a Ginger Light CD, we did some tracks from the poems I've written.
Right, okay. So that's what this next track, which we will play in a few minutes, China Red.
Yes.
So the poem is by Anna Kavan?
No, the poem's by me. The poem is all by me. They just have Anna Kavan as a theme.
Okay, okay. She a London person, bohemian?
She lived in London, yes, in Hillsey Road in Kensington. She was published by Peter Owen and various other people.
Right.
She's one of the most amazing woman writers in history.
Right, okay. Have you heard about Anne Quinn? Do you know about
her? I have, yes.
There's a new book by her, isn't
there?
That's
right.
Or about her.
Yes, Anne Quinn drowned herself off the Brighton piers, as you know.
Yeah.
Anna Kavan committed suicide by a large heroin overdose.
Right. I detect a thread here. Mm. Is this some sort of... is this the fate of the poet, Jeremy?
Well, I think there's a very high suicide rate amongst writers, yes, because the kind of narcissistic introjection of writing in which you are continually the subjective participant rather than the objective observer can drive you into an impasse.
Right.
I'm currently writing a book about poets and suicide called Swallowing the Romantic Snake.
Right. Okay. So what does that mean, swallowing the romantic snake?
Well, I guess it means swallowing yourself because suicide is a form of cannibalism, isn't it?
Is it?
Well, psychically, you kind of devour yourself in the process.
Yes, but could it be also, I suppose we have to be a bit careful about, I don't really want to get too much into it, but can it be a positive choice?
Totally. It need not be pathologized at all. I think wanting to exit under your own terms can be a very positive and possibly, although no
so it's
death.
It's not necessarily
negative,
the consequence of misery, even.
No, it may be the consequence of optimism.
Oh, really?
How could want that to be? Control my own death and so project myself out of my body at a particular moment in time over which I have control.
Right, but you wouldn't think that to live one more day would be more hopeful?
That's a very difficult question, isn't it?
If you enjoy life, if you just enjoy being in the day, as it were, you know, wouldn't you miss that possibility of living
that
one more day?
That would depend if you believed it was the end or not.
But it wouldn't be the end. I mean, it would carry on after you died, so that it won't be the end. But it's like you're saying, I'm out of here. But it's, you see what I'm saying? About the optimistic bit. I mean, isn't it more optimistic to say, well, I enjoy life so much, I might as well just carry on because tomorrow will be just as pleasant as today?
Yeah, but it's not pleasant.
Oh, there we are. Well, so that's my point. So it's a consequence of misery, then?
Partly, yeah.
Right.
And escape.
I very much argue that there is a suicide gene and that the majority of suicides have that particular gene.
Right. Okay.
You can interpret that biomedically or psychically, but I do believe there is a suicide gene. It has been identified by various neuroscientists, but in some people it's much more pronounced than in others.
Right. Okay. So how are you getting on with this book?
I've probably written about 300 pages of it so far, yes.
Okay. And are you covering... There's a book, isn't there, called Four Dada Suicides?
There is, published by Atlas Press.
Exactly, yeah. Yes, which is sort of four very particular individuals who were significant sort of individuals who had an influence on art movements and so on.
The Savage God.
Yes,
the Savage God by Alvarez.
Yes, which is probably the major one, isn't it?
Right.
On writers and suicide.
Yeah. Yeah.
So mine is probably the
I suppose
first.
At this point, we probably should give out the Samaritan's number. But I'm afraid I don't have it to hand.
Maybe play some music.
If you're out there, just don't do it. Tomorrow will be wonderful, really. It's a nice summer's day. And we're enjoying ourselves here.
Of course we are.
Okay. So should we play China
yes.
Red?
Yes.
Okay, so China Red, tell me again. This is the Annika Van...
It's a poem about Annika Van and her life.
Okay.
Aspects of her. Rattling an egg summons. It's the idea of land enormity like space. Invites before finding the yolk, one in the billions. She injects a flower to personalize a drop of blood like a red cyclamen. Breakfast with extras, so it goes, so it goes. Then painting China as a red thumbnail in cosmic smog. Downsize it to seconds before Big Bang. There's a gas bill needs her attention. Sell a ring to pay to write. Sell a ring to pay. Her inheritance goes in sugared pops. Today, a Shenzhou 10 rocket turns the sky orange at the Wenchang launch. A 53 million tech quantum phenomenon blasted from tropical Hainan. Syringe shaped like her barrel. Find a vein and join the superhighway to China that's risen in her brain in Kensington. The egg scooped out of its neat cranium as all she eats, painting across the day. Painting across the day.
I'm thinking of going straight into Mod Girl. What do you think?
Yeah.
This next one is by Gerard Malanga, called To the Young Model, Name Unknown. And this was recorded live at the Leo Castelli Gallery in December 1964. And it could prompt a bit of a chat about perhaps about Mods and John Stephen, I suppose. We'll see.
Gary Malanga will read me some poems, which are shortly to be illustrated by Andy Warhol. The poems, as far as I can tell, do not relate particularly to this exhibit, but Mr. Malanga thought it would be an appropriate setting for his poetry. The length of the reading will be about 45 minutes. Thank you so much for your patience, Mr. Malanga.
Can everyone hear me? This poem is actually the first poem I ever wrote in this series of fashion poems. It's entitled To Young Model Name Unknown, photographed by Francesco Scovullo. The Peck and Peck girl applauds the strategy of Hadley Cashmere, now gentle country air left, to go calling in the afternoon, pale gray, flannel dressed, gracefully princess-shaped, its gray collar, deeply cut, filled with a fluff of gray rabbit fur. The new country look of the jumpsuit opposite. Here, fresh, bright and Irish and white, stitched sheer navy blue wool, Irish country airs, the changing outline of Irish fashion.
So that's as much as we get from that. So the reading apparently goes on for 45 minutes. But so that's Gerard Malanga in 64, sort of talking about fashion. Your John Stephen book was specifically about that mod era, wasn't it?
Yes, it intersects with that poem. Of course it does. And I'm a big admirer of Gerard Malanga's poetry. Amongst my many pursuits, I wrote a book about John Stephen called King of Carnaby Street, the man who created Carnaby Street in the late 50s and piloted it throughout the 60s.
Yeah. What did you think of that? Did you like that poem? Or?
Yes, I like Gerard Malanga's way of reading very much.
Right. Excellent. Okay. Well, what should we say? What should we move on to next? We could still... we've got another track to play here called Dorian...
Excess and Ruin, it's called, the track.
Is this one Dorian...
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about... This is from your forthcoming...
We're just in the process of finishing off the next album.
Okay.
This track has guest musicians. We've got Gavin Friday and David Jay from Bauhaus playing bass.
Okay.
So it's just one of the tracks that's going to be on the next album.
Okay. How many albums do you have out? As the Ginger Light, by the way.
This will be the third one.
Third as Ginger Light.
Yeah.
All right. So we could play this and then perhaps we'll get another poem from you, Jeremy.
Yes, of course.
Another reading would be great.
Of course. Dorian Gray, how would you like to pay, sir? Dorian Gray, Dorian Gray, how would you like to pay, sir? Every pretty boy hustler goes down to the dilly. Blonde trash likes tainted cash or cute sugar daddy. If I met Jack the Ripper, I'd make him confess you get ruined by numbers as a dangerous excess. Every boy on the game's the same as a woman. He wants diamonds and clothes and a big spender man. When I met Henry Wotton, at the bottom of the pile, he'd got diamond fillings and a knife in his smile. Dorian Gray, Dorian Gray, how would you like to pay, sir? Henry gave me the gold key to the city's outlaws.
I pickpocketed pockets like a cat with great claws. I got entrees to soirees, bad blood attracts class. When I picked up a tumbler, I left lipstick on the glass. When I killed for the thrill, I felt nothing at all. It was like tagging graffiti in red squirts on a wall. If I met Jack the Ripper, I'd make him confess you get ruined by numbers as a dangerous excess.
Dorian Gray.
Dorian Gray, how would you like to play, sir?
Dorian Gray.
Dorian Gray, how would you like to play, sir?
Excess and ruin. The two go together like whiskey and ginger, makes red stormy weather.
Dorian Gray.
Dorian Gray, how would you like to play, sir?
Dorian Gray.
Dorian Gray, how would you like to play, sir?
Is that called Dorian Gray? Is that obvious?
Excess
obvious question?
And Ruin.
Excess and Ruin.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's off the an album which is still in production.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Just finishing off.
Does anybody, do people release singles anymore? Is that a sort of thing you do?
I think pop stars do.
Have you not? You've not thought? No. Is there no point?
Probably not. Not where poetry's concerned.
No, probably not. Well, I think has a certain.
Well, we have the marvellous vocalist Gavin Friday on it, of course.
Yeah.
Is that right? I see. Okay. Yeah. So it's your words, Jeremy.
And we've also just done an album with Gavin.
Yes, which is in process.
That's
okay.
And that's all the Shakespeare sonnets that Jeremy's rewritten.
Right.
Yeah, I rewrote all of Shakespeare's 150 sonnets.
Did you really?
Called Shakespeare in Soho. And so
you're so busy.
It's like, you know, it's not a great deal that I do. It's
right. Oh, gosh.
Fills in some time. Okay. But you know, yes, we.
And Gavin's, we've just completed the album, more or less. It's being mixed now.
Okay, right. Fantastic.
Gavin is one of our favourite singers, of course.
Right. I'm just going to round up. You've been listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM with Jeremy Reed and the Ginger Light, which is a musical collaboration between the acclaimed poet and author Jeremy Reed and the musician and producer Itchy Ear, also known as Gerald McNee. Together they create a performance dynamic unparalleled in British poetry. And you are appearing at the Horse Hospital.
Next Thursday.
Next 28th, Thursday, 28th.
7:30.
With other people such as Ian Sinclair.
That's right, yes.
Who's presumably
Chris
doing
McCabe,
yes. Chris McCabe and so on. Jeremy, would you like to read another poem before we sort of...
Yeah, as it's midsummer, I thought I'd read an unusual poem about sunflowers. Them mobsters, punch drunk, brute indifference with a yellow fringe, and a black eye got from mafia, and the blank amnesiac look I associate with a truck. This year they're tall as a rocket stood vertical on its pads, the universe as its window as a torched hydrogen plume. Their look, always seems focused like an amber traffic light directly at the looker. Makes me paranoid, afraid they're one up on me, biohacking my brain, directing me to wrong moves like fast radio signals from some exo-frequency. They're like some unpalatable omelette, a loony psycho-humanoid doing surveillance, yellower than scrambling the sun as an egg, as an egg.
Right. There's no Van Gogh there, is there?
Well, it's nice to think you can make the sun into an omelette.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Well, thank you both very much for coming in and presenting yourselves and the poetry and so on. We could play Loneliness.
Yeah.
Also from
the Anna Kavan.
Yes, also another poem, empathizing with Anna Kavan.
Right. Okay. We've probably got... we'll play that, and then if there's 30 seconds left, we can mention the Horse Hospital again.
Okay. Thank you.
This is Loneliness from... Is there a name for this album yet? Or?
China Red Smoke. The writing writes me. Autonomous loop. Loneliness doesn't heat with blood. It's a cool grey opacity. Not blue like in the song wailed by Nina Simone. And it's a cannibal feeds on itself. Like going in a vein with heroin for rush hour dopamine. Anna. All the soul on vision as addiction orbit themselves. Solipsistic absorption in the one can't get around. Loneliness has a steamy fuzz like a shower afterglow, a tighter fit than air on air. A sociopathic nose for staying in, a vacuum sealed down in the cellar. Spook, spook, spook. It's like a foggy corona I light with words. Don't do a thing to alter thick weather. This drug biting on me is me, indifferent as the North Circular.
This program has been brought to you by Resonance 104.4 FM. If you liked what you heard and want to support our work, please make a donation at fundraiser.resonance.fm.